podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, February 23rd, 2020.
How you like that, huh?
February 23rd, 2020. This is episode 1672. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast comes to you from TWiT's LastPass Studios. Securing every access point in your company doesn't have to be a challenge. LastPass unifies access and authentication to make securing your employees simple and secure. Check out LastPass.com/TWiT to learn more. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about, tech, computers, the internet, home theater, surround sound, big screen TVs, smartphones, smart watches, augmented reality, virtual reality, all that kind of reality. Anything with a chip in it, 8888, Ask Leo is my phone number, 888-827-5536. A couple of countries that's available in the U.S. and Canada. Outside that area, I think you got to go to something like Skype Out to call me, but it still should be toll-free, 888-827-5536. As you listen, you may be tempted. You may say, I should write this down, but don't take your hands off the wheel, my friend. Just remember this, techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. That's our website. It's free. It's open. There's no sign-up, and everything's there. So James is writing this all down. He's my scribe, writing it all down as I talk. And then we add audio and video from the show after the fact. You can add your comments if you have a suggestion. If you're yelling at the radio saying, Leo, you're full of it. Here's a better idea. No point yelling at the radio. I can't hear you. However, you can talk to the website. That's techguylabs.com. And that's really valuable. We're all in this together. Really, this show is about the notion that we got to support ourselves, that the technology companies don't do a very good job, do they, of making usable products and then helping you use the products and then fixing the problems when they come around. And so that's kind of what this is. This is all of us getting together to help each other. They used to call it a user group. Nowadays, it's just kind of a radio show, a user group of the airwaves, I like to think of it. I was reading an article. You probably see it in your, your news feed, by an Australian virologist who says, well, you should probably plan on a COVID-19 pandemic. It probably will come to a town or a city near you. No reason to panic, and nobody wants to start a panic or anything like this, but it would be prudent to prepare. We bought way back when face masks when there were big wildfires up here, and it was very smoky. And so I said, honey, this is a 21st century conversation. Honey, where are the N95 masks? I think they're in the pantry. Okay, I'm checking. First, I couldn't find them. I thought, oh, the darn kids are playing with them again, playing bank robber or whatever. No, I found them. So you might, masks will be hard to come by at some point. The article suggested that, gingerly you might start thinking about what if it's not like everybody's, it's not like going to be the plague where everybody's going to be dying, but you might, for instance, it might be as it sweeps through your town, you might not want to go to the store, So you might want to stock up on things so you can spend, they said, a couple of weeks without going to the store. And it's good to keep in mind. Don't go crazy. Don't take all the toilet paper off the shelf. Leave some for the next guy. Conferences are already impacted. Wednesday or Tuesday this week in San Francisco, there's a big security conference. Quite a big deal. RSA, it's called. The RSA conference. And already one of the platinum sponsors, IBM, has bowed out. Said, we don't want to send anybody to San Francisco, despite the fact that there's a few handful of cases of COVID-19 cases in San Francisco. I think it's just prudent. The whole Mobile World Conference was canceled in Barcelona last week just because everybody said, hey, why take a chance? Do I really need to see that new phone that bad? No, you don't. Why take a chance? I was thinking, what could our phones do to help us? And I've got a great idea for an app. Maybe you know of this app, or you would like to write this app. One of the things doctors say, of course, you got to wash your hands a lot, wipe down surfaces. I learned that one famous supermodel, I think it was Naomi Campbell, wipes down all the surfaces before she gets on an airplane and then has a seat cover. She brings with her a cover over to put over the seat. I mean, she probably wears a bunny suit. I don't know what but she just does. I mean, if you fly a lot, I guess you could. It's reasonable. It's not just the COVID. There's lots of other stuff out there. You know, just a cold is a pain, right? How often do we come home from conferences with colds that we got from other attendees? It's very common. Very common. But I thought one of the things they're talking about, besides wearing masks and washing your hands a lot, is the real danger is inoculating yourself by touching an infected surface and then touching your face. And we touch our faces all the time, 8 times a minute, I think I saw. So this is where technology could be so helpful. I want a program. Maybe you could write this. Go ahead. You write it. It could be on my computer. All my computers have little cameras, or my phone, that watches me, and it goes, eh, whenever I try to touch my face. Just goes, eh, don't do it. This article suggested you enlist friends and family to kind of all coach each other. Oh, you're touching your face. Stop it. It's hard to stop. Have you tried? As I've been talking to you, I've touched my face 3 times. I think we need a little program that would say, don't touch your face. Because if we could learn, you know, just that little habit alone would help a lot. Anyway, I had that thought. It was a shower thought this morning as I was getting ready for the show. Well, that's what we need. We already, I mean, all of our stuff does face recognition now. Let's use it for something useful. A little, just like, there's a face. I see a face. The computer could say, I see a face. Oh, there's a hand reaching. Oh, here comes a hand. Eh. That would be good. What do you think, Dr. Mom? Our resident physician in the chat room. One of our chatters says, I'll build the face proximity app only if I can link it to a shock collar. Now, that's going too far. That's going too far. She says in surgery training, they learn not to touch their face. They actually have to practice that. We learn to control our hands. So, interesting. Military drills in our chat room, Udo US Dwiz. I never know how to say your chat handle. UOS Dwiz says, military drills teach you to ignore needing to scratch your face. Wow. That's hard, isn't it? It's just a natural kind of... All right, I tell you what. Those of you who are watching our live video stream, you have my permission, if I touch my face, to say, hey, stop it. Tomorrow, we're supposed to learn, Wall Street Journal reported this weekend. Oh, see, I was about to scratch my nose. Can't do it. Wall Street Journal story. Intuit, you know Intuit, the folks who did Quicken, are about ready to make their biggest acquisition ever. It's an app. They want to buy the app Credit Karma. You know Credit Karma? Credit Karma is free. It's very popular. It tells you what your, you know, FICO score is or something like it. $7 billion. What? $7 billion. It makes it so quaint. When Facebook bought Instagram some years ago, everybody was kind of stunned. $1 billion for an app? A billion with a B for an app? Now that's nothing. WhatsApp sold for $22 billion. And Credit Karma, basically Credit Karma gives you access to your credit score. And by the way, there's no revenue in it as far as I can tell. Maybe there is. Maybe there's some stuff they sell on the side, or maybe they get affiliate fees or something. But it basically free access to your credit score, your borrowing history. It'll alert you to data breaches, credit monitoring, they do tax preparation. Okay. So that's Intuit's big in that business. They do TurboTax. It's big tax time for them. Customers, in turn, according to the journal, receive offers from other companies for credit cards and loans tailored to their credit history, and Credit Karma makes money when customers use those products. All right, it's like Mint. Mint does that, too. It's free. Intuit used to do Mint, but I think they sold Mint. Intuit is worth $77 billion. They're willing to spend a tenth of their total worth for this free app. Wow. Wow. Isn't that, what a world. Makes you want to write an app. How about one that keep you from touching your face? Think of all the money you could make. I'm just saying. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. We're going to go to the phones in just a second. Kim is here. She's answering as quick as her little finger. Don't touch your face. Don't touch your face, Kim. Nope. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. Give me a ring. Let's talk high tech right after this. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the unbreakable Kim Schaffer. She don't take no Schaffer. Hello, Kimmy Schaffer.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Our phone angel. Kim answers the phone, so if you call, you will talk first to her.
Yep.
And she will verify that you're not a blooming idiot.
Or a bot.
Or a bot. Do we get bots yet? Hello? This
no.
is Vladimir calling from Moscow.
What was it, the Google Duo or whatever? I was fully expecting to get fake calls from that thing when that came out.
Yeah. Yeah, the Duo sounded pretty real. I even
it
put
did.
In little, like pauses, like,
Yeah.
Although apparently that was when the computer was thinking. See, in Star Trek, they would go, working, working. Now they just
sound like humans.
I think that's more sensible, really. Yeah.
There's been a couple times I thought I was getting duped because of a delay, maybe in a different country.
Oh yeah.
And I thought, oh, that kind of sounds unnatural.
Like it's thinking.
Yeah, but I think it was more the delay of the phone call for me.
So you don't know. See, if it were really good, but you wouldn't know.
Oh no.
Did you see there was a deep fake with Jeff Bezos and Bill Gates?
Oh.
I thought it was pretty good. I'm trying to remember what they, it's probably on YouTube, but I thought it was pretty good. Deep fake is when they take a video and they replace, the real video with your person or face or whatever, right?
Yes, they've done that with some politicians lately.
I usually think I can tell the difference, right?
Yeah.
But this one was pretty good. It wasn't Bill Gates. It was Elon Musk.
Oh, okay.
And it was Star Trek. So they took a Star Trek video and they put Elon Musk's face and Jeff Bezos' face. Bezos is the alien, of course. I'll put a link. Scooter X found it for me. Thank you, Scooter X. I'll put a link in the show notes if you want to see it. I usually think I look at these and go, oh, I can tell that's fake. But Elon as
really
a
good.
Yeah, Elon looks pretty good as Captain Kirk, and Jeff Bezos was the alien with the big brain. I don't know if you remember this.
The big.
This one is the first deep fake I've seen where I thought, wow, that's pretty good. That could fool me. I don't know. I'm not too worried about deep fakes, but I feel like, you know. They're coming soon, and so don't believe anything. Anytime you see Kim Schaffer...
It might not be me.
...on a table, it's not her.
With a lampshade on my head, it's not me.
What's amazing is the mouth movements, everything looks like it's real. I mean, it's kind of amazing. So, I don't know. I do feel like... Of course, this probably took years and, you know... That's not Kirk. That's Chris Pike. I'm sorry. Excuse me, Leo. It isn't Captain Kirk. It's Captain Pike. It's from the Star Trek pilot, remember? Okay, sorry. But it's pretty good.
I don't... Did you hear about this Lexus that went off the cliff somewhere down in like San Mateo County?
No.
And they were looking for it. And then there was an article that... They think the video's not even real and it was a deep fake.
Oh, I did see the original.
Yeah.
That didn't really happen?
There was a whole article about how that it's possible that was never...
Could easily have been faked.
And I was horrified when I saw the video, and now I'm hearing that it probably wasn't even real. Like, so somebody put that out to the media and they ran with it.
Chat room says I've been nerd shamed for not knowing that was Captain Christopher Pike. I have been nerd shamed. Maybe we should just take a call.
Yeah,
and I can
how
get
about
out of this
David in Wichita Falls, Texas?
Thank you.
He'd like
Kim.
To talk to you.
Thank you. Hello, David. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you today?
I am well. How are you?
I am not a bot.
I am not a bot. I am not.
Anyway.
There used to be, you remember Eliza, you would ask the computer psychiatrist, are you a computer? And she would have all sorts of funny ways of disarming that. Maybe a new Asimov's law of robotics that says if you're asked if you're a bot, you must respond yes. Anyway, what can I do for you, David?
Well, first of all, I missed your show yesterday. I was at the Dallas Vinyl Records show.
Oh, fun. Is that vinyl records like the old days?
Thousands and thousands of them.
Neat. Do you have a turntable?
Yes.
Oh, good, because otherwise you just have to look at them. Do you have a fancy $10,000 turntable or just, run-of-the-mill?
Just my USB plug-in.
Yeah.
I got my cassette player plug-in.
Why do you like vinyl? Is it just nostalgic or do you think it sounds better?
Well, I'm 68. So I've been collecting records since the 60s.
We're old enough to remember lying on the floor with the Koss Pro 440A headphones that weighed 20 pounds on, with your feet in the air, looking at the album cover and reading the lyrics on the back and listening to the album. Those were the days.
All right. Anyway. I'm not sure if I really have a problem or not. The thing is, I'd turn my computer on, and it'd come on normally, take a few seconds for the screen to come up. And then for 2 or 3 days in a row, it took like 2 or 3 minutes for the screen to come up. But once it did, everything worked fine.
Okay.
And then 2 or 3 times after that, the next time it came on just like it used to.
So it's a slow boot, but it's not every time. It's only the first time.
Right. Like once a day for like 3 days in a row, and then it didn't happen to happen normally. Couple days, and then it did it again once or twice.
It's normal for there to be slow boots. Then the number one cause of that is hard drives wearing out. Do you have a spinning hard drive, the old-fashioned kind?
No.
Not a vinyl hard drive? You have a solid state? Well, that's probably not case then.
Yeah, same with the computer.
Sometimes it could be something else running in the background. The only sure way to fix this is reinstall Windows. I don't think you want to do that. Sam Ed coming up. I'll talk off here.
A big deal.
Yeah, there is a weird thing that can happen. So if it was slow to boot up, it booted up, and then you did a restart, would it boot up fast the next time?
Yes.
Every time?
Yeah. If I restarted, it came right up.
So it's only during a cold boot, when the machine's cold, that it's slow.
Right.
If you shut it all the way, you boot it up, you're looking at, you shut it down instead of restart. You shut it all the way down and then start up. Does it start up normally?
Yeah, I turn it off every day.
So it's only in the morning when you first turn it on?
Well, the afternoon, depends on when I turn it on.
If it's been cold, though, if it hasn't been used in a few hours, it's slow.
Well, again,
it's not consistent at all.
Sometimes it did, and then it's normal.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't worry about it if it doesn't happen all the time. Once it starts happening all the time, then you can think, oh, there's something starting up or something like that. But if it only is once in a while, it may just be that something is getting updated and it's just taking a little longer to start up. It is annoying. That's a long time to start up, and especially for a solid-state drive.
I'm retired, so I've got time.
Time's the one thing we can't get more of, David.
I know. I got time to clean my vinyl records.
Do you have a disc washer?
No, I got one of those little brush things. You spray a thing on the brush.
Yeah, yeah. We had the old, remember they had a little like velvet on the bottom and a wood handle? Yeah.
That's it.
They call that the disc washer 3 or something, Oh, and there's little drops.
But whenever I buy vinyl from the record show, it's the third year I've been, they're already cleaned when I get them.
Nice. So they're not new. They're used.
Yeah.
You heard, I don't know if you heard a couple of weeks ago, Scott had the story that the only one in the United States mastering companies burnt to the ground and lost all their equipment. That's scary.
Yeah. Well, like I've got about 800-900 vinyl record albums. Yikes. Through the year, so
I love. You know, I don't. I have a friend who's roughly my age, roughly our age, and he's got the biggest collection I've ever seen. You might want to turn off Windows Fast Start. Oddly enough, Fast Start does not necessarily is one of the things where it can change the way your thing starts up. So if you hit the Windows key and Windows key and hit and type fast start and see if try turning it off just to see if that helps.
I'll turn it off right this second. No, I think I'll wait.
Hey, it's a pleasure talking to you, David.
Well, thank you, and I thought your story about faces was very touching.
I just touched my face. Oh, man. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. Yep. Sam's principal researcher at Navigant Research. He does a great podcast. If you're an auto buff, Wheel Bearings is his podcast at wheelbearings.media. Joins us every week to talk about the latest, the greatest. Hello, Sammy.
Hey, Leo, and we actually just finished recording an episode of Wheel Bearings just before I logged on for this, talking about one of my co-hosts, Rebecca Lindland, was out in Nevada this week driving the new 2020 Corvette, the first mid-engine Corvette.
Ooh,
and
she's lucky.
She was quite impressed with it. Mm. Can't wait to get my hands on one of those later this summer.
As you know, my wife is a real vet fan. She says her next car is going to be the electric Corvette if it ever comes out.
It probably will be in a couple of years. There's been some spy photos that showed up of one of these Corvettes, a prototype running around with a plug on it.
Ooh.
And there was some speculation that it would be a plug-in hybrid Corvette. But actually, GM's made it pretty clear, and Mark Royce, who's the president of GM, was asked about this. And he said, no, we're not doing any more hybrids or plug-in hybrids. We're going all in on battery electric.
Good.
So when an electrified vet comes up, it's going to be all battery.
Well, and you'll see my wife riding a fire engine red one around town. So you're sitting in the cockpit. Actually, it's a giant cockpit, so it looks like a little tiny Sam sitting in the driver's seat of a Tesla. And I recognize that screen because it's time to get an update.
That's right. And so... You know, Tesla was the first automaker to introduce over-the-air software updates for all major functions in the vehicle. Before Tesla, companies were doing over-the-air updates for things like the infotainment system for the telematics, but nobody had ever done it for other systems in the vehicle because it requires some pretty significant changes to the electrical architecture to be able to do it reliably and safely, and also security enhancements to make sure that you don't want to have unauthorized people updating your software in your car.
That would not be good.
Yeah, so Tesla was the first to do it, starting with the Model S in 2012, and now we're starting to see vehicles coming out now that and pretty much most new vehicles coming out over the coming years will have over-the-air software update capability. And it got me thinking the other day that something that I've heard you talk about many times over the years here on the Tech Guy Show and on various other podcasts you do is this idea that you should never buy a product for what it might be someday.
You always
buy it for what it can, pay for what it can do now, because you never know what it's, things can be promised and they may or may not be delivered. Especially with phones, we've learned, it's like, you might get updates or you might not, even though it's got update capability, you may or may not actually get updates.
I've learned that through bitter experience. How many products have I bought that never got updated? Yeah.
Right. Or, you get updates that perhaps were not necessarily upgrades, shall we say. sometimes they were side grades or downgrades. This is an issue that as you're shopping for cars, you got to start thinking about this as well, because, new vehicles are going to have update capability and, manufacturers are promising that they're going to provide updates, to fix things and also add new functionality. But, there's no guarantee. Tesla has done a pretty remarkable job of adding new functionality to vehicles, but there's certainly been times when some of those upgrades or updates were actually downgrades. We talked last time about, a customer that had bought a used Tesla and had,
downgraded
autopilot functionality taken away. And since that time, since we had that conversation last week, I think it was, Tesla actually reverted and they gave him back the autopilot and self-driving capability were on the sticker that, for the car that he paid. So he, while whether or not the original owner had actually paid for those features and had them on there, we just still don't know. But the fact is, when this particular owner bought the vehicle, it was listed on there, and he paid a price assuming that it was going to be there, and that functionality was there.
Yeah.
So, you know, for Tesla to take that away, I think was a mistake. They should not have done that.
The most amazing thing, Tesla – this is, by the way, Tesla can take some blame for this as well as praise, because they've essentially – they're a software company more than a car company, and they run their cars like software that gets regularly updated. They have said – I think Elon tweeted that there is an update coming that will increase the range of your battery. Like, what?
Right. Well, they've done this on several occasions over the last several years, but there have also been times when they've gone the opposite direction.
Right.
You know, so, yeah, they
that
just...
That I can understand, you know, because that maybe you're protecting the battery by, you know, changing its charging patterns. But that's pretty amazing if they could give you more range.
Yeah. And, you know, that comes down to how they're controlling the battery management system and the motors and, you know, maybe tweaking it so you're getting a little more regenerative braking, putting more energy back in.
I always felt like my Tesla was a golf cart with a fancy computer system on top of it. Now I know it is. I mean, that really is. Yeah.
And that's going to be the case going forward for most new vehicles, is they're going to have that ability to – they're increasingly becoming software-defined. Like, you know, we talked about software-defined radio and things like that. Now, you know, we're getting into the era of the software-defined car. And so you will have the ability to update and add new features to cars, some of which will be – you know, manufacturers will provide them free of charge. In other cases, they'll charge for them. And this is going to be a new thing. But just, you know, a word of warning, you know, just like with your phone, there's no guarantee that you're actually going to get, you know, improvements to your car. So, you know, when you make your decision about what you're going to buy, make those decisions based on what it can do today, and then if it does get better over time, great. That's a bonus. You've gotten more for your money. But buy based on what it can do today when you drive it off the lot.
It's not the only disconnect, because we were talking about this, about the Sonos speakers and so forth. We are now in a situation where you're buying what you consider a durable good, something that's not going to change in the last 10, 15, 20 years, a car, but you're also buying software. And
which may or may not be durable.
Yeah, software is famously not durable. Look at Windows 7. After 10 years, they said, you know, it's just nothing wrong with that computer, but Windows 7's gone. So we're really buying computers now, and we have to kind of change our expectations and thinking, because you know, an automobile for years you could tune it up yourself. You know, you pretty much understood how it worked. These things are incredibly complex digital devices as much as anything else these days.
Yeah, and you know, there's so much on there now that, you know, unless you're a software developer, you know, and you can actually go in and change the software, there's actually so much less that you can change from a hardware perspective on many new vehicles. I mean, it used to be that, you know, what I said about, you know, buying what it can do today as opposed to what it might be able to do at some point, that wasn't always the case. You know, it's always been the case that, you know, people could upgrade their vehicles, and, you know, I mean, I've often had upgrades on many of the cars that I've owned over the years. I've done upgrades to them that made them better. Mostly better. not always, but you try.
Sam Abul-Samad, he is a principal researcher at Navigant Research. His podcast is Wheel Bearings at wheelbearings.media. And really, Sam, you should be glad about this trend, because honestly, this is a tech show. I don't know if we'd have a car guy, except that nowadays cars really are technology. They really are. Thank you, Sam. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Leo.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. It's true of airplanes, too. Somebody's mentioning the 737 MAX. I mean, it's true of, I guess, everything from now on. I would like a Caesar. Thank you. When are you coming out here again? Soon?
I'll be out there on March 22nd, 1 month from now, for coming out for NVIDIA GTC.
Fun.
Assuming it doesn't get canceled because we all have coronavirus.
Yeah, I really wonder, you know, I think conferences for the next few months might be in jeopardy. I wonder, I guess RSA is going on. We're having a party. LastPass is having a party Wednesday night at RSA, and I'm thinking, I'm going.
Yeah, well, the Geneva Motor Show is coming up in a week and a half, and so far there's been no indications of companies bailing out of that, so we'll see what happens. Yeah. But I've got an Audi e-tron lined up, and so I'm going to come up. I talked to Karsten, going to bring that up, and we're going to do a hands-on tech review with that.
Good.
So you can try that out if you like.
Good. I will. I'd love to.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that I want the Mach-E. You know, I haven't bought it yet, and I should pay attention to everything else out there. I'm definitely getting an electric vehicle.
Well, the Mach-E will definitely have longer driving range than the Audi does.
That's not as important. I really just go back and forth to work.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, if you want to take it up to Tahoe, or wherever, anywhere else you want to go, then or driving down.
I'm excited about the Mach-E.
I'm not going down to a 49ers game or something.
Right. I'm not having second thoughts by any means.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm an Audi guy. I like the Audi. So
yeah,
I'd like to see it anyway.
Be a nice substitute for the A8.
Yeah. There you go. We can work it out. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, working out your tech problems at 8888. Ask Leo. Randy, Dallas, Texas. Thanks for hanging on, Randy.
Hey, thank you.
What can I do for you? Yep.
Hey, great. I love your show, man.
Thank you.
I bought about $2,000 worth of BS printers in my lifetime, but you told me about this Epson, and I got the 2750, and I love it to death. I just don't do a whole lot of printing, so now I need to print some color documents, and I can't get the color side to work. So I went through the whole nozzle clean hoops and everything. So now I'm at the point I don't know what to do with this printer. I've got it, and I try to go into Best Buy or Wally World or wherever to try to get the cleaners for this thing, and they don't.
There is a if you do the nozzle clean a couple of times, it will then offer you a more thorough nozzle cleaning. But I would suggest calling Epson. They have very good tech support people on the line, and they will walk you through that. And I'm pretty sure that's what they recommend. You know, I brought this up with Epson because it's always been my position that the problem with inkjet is if you don't print every week, you're going to get clogged up nozzles. So you've been printing black and white, but you don't use the color, you're going to get clogged up nozzles. And they said, no, on these Epson EcoTanks, we've coated the heads. They don't clog. I'm sorry it's happening to you. It seems to me that this is kind of just a problem all inkjets have because of the way inkjets work. But call them, and they can help you out.
I'll do it. And I thank you for the advice on buying the printer. I love the printer.
It's a great printer,
It's been one I've had so far, but it's just the way it is. I don't do a whole lot of printing. Man, you're a prince of a guy, and I love your show. Keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you, Randy. I really appreciate it. The good thing, and we should mention once again, Epson's a sponsor, but the good thing about the EcoTank is nozzle cleaning, especially the thorough nozzle cleaning that you'll get to after you do a few of these, can use up, you know, a bit of ink. If you're on cartridges, that's going to use up, a significant portion of that cartridge. But you've got those tanks. You've got plenty of ink. My suggestion is just do a color test print once a week just to keep those things flowing. I think it's, in my opinion, it's endemic to all inkjets. I know Epson's done what they can to prevent that. But for years, I've said it, and I haven't really changed my recommendation. If you hardly ever print, an inkjet might not be the right choice for you. It's really for people who print at least once a week. And, that could just be a color test print. Or the nozzle check is in color. Just do the nozzle check. And that's enough to keep those nozzles free-flowing. Line 3, James Parkersburg, West Virginia. Hello, James.
Good afternoon there, Mr. Leo Laporte.
Good afternoon, Mr. James.
Hey, this doesn't happen every single time Windows 10 decides it wants to update. It seems like it's mostly on a new build.
Right. What happens?
After I turned it off and rebooted it, it comes on. And some reason it decides it doesn't like my particular drivers I'm using at the moment. And it changes it to something else it seems to like better.
Is it the same hardware, or is it even different hardware? It says you have an Epson printer. I'm going to give you maybe it's just updating the driver. I mean, that's all it's doing. You say it happens when you have the big ones, this twice a year feature updates.
It seems like that's when it decides to go in and say, well, I don't like these ones, and I'm just going to change it right now.
That's annoying.
Yeah.
This is Microsoft's famous plug and play feature. The idea is, and that was a good idea, users shouldn't have to worry about drivers. Drivers are little programs that are different for everybody because they're designed to help Windows talk to whatever your hardware is, whatever your hard drive, your monitor, your printer, your mouse, your keyboard. All of them have these little driver programs that are basically just little interpreters that help Windows talk to them. That way, Windows only has to have one set of commands, and the driver interprets it so that the mouse understands it. It could just be that as part of the update, Microsoft saying, well, we really should update everything, including those drivers, especially video drivers. You can always change it. You can either go back. I think a good idea, and this is part of what you need to do on a regular basis to keep Windows happy, is to check and see if there are new drivers from the manufacturer's website. So one of the problems with drivers is there's more than one driver. Microsoft has a set of drivers that they keep as part of Windows Update. That may not be the latest. There's even an often older driver called the WQHL driver, the Windows Quality Hardware Lab, which is a special certification that a driver can get. Those are, you know, supposed to be more reliable, but they're often older because most companies don't bother to get this certification very often. It's expensive. So you'll have the WHQL driver. That might be the most stable, but not the most complete. You'll have the driver Microsoft knows about. But then if you go to the website of the manufacturer, they'll have drivers, often the most up-to-date driver. Maybe they'll be more buggy, maybe not. They may have older versions. And then it gets even worse if you're using, for instance, an NVIDIA video card. There's the manufacturer, but there's also NVIDIA, because NVIDIA doesn't make cards. They design them, and then different manufacturers, EVGA, makes them, or whoever. So if you have an EVGA video card, there'll be a driver from EVGA. There'll be an NVIDIA reference driver. I've now got at least four different drivers. It's not necessarily the case that the most recent one is the best. So periodically, what I like to do is go to the manufacturer's website and see if there's a new driver. Good hardware will do that automatically. For instance, you know, video cards almost always have a program that comes with them. Your computer may also have a program. Lenovo's, for instance, have a program that does all the updating, not just Windows Update, but all the other hardware too. And because the laptop from Lenovo, they know everything that's on here, they might do a better job of updating those drivers than Windows does. So I don't think what Windows does is typically the best thing to do. It may be the most reliable. It may not. So it's, you know, if you do the Windows update and everything goes fine, I'd say, well, I guess I'm okay. But if you're, you know, you feel like you're not getting the performance you want or you have bugs, then I would go to the manufacturer's site. If it's a laptop, go to the laptop manufacturer's site.
I built this machine. It doesn't even have a company name on it.
That's where you have now a bigger responsibility. Whenever people say, I want to build my own machine, I tell them, okay. But instead of going to Dell or HP or Lenovo, you now go to you. It's your responsibility to keep track of all the hardware on there and keep those drivers up to date. So that probably explains it. That's why this isn't a common complaint. Most of the time what Microsoft does is they check with Dell and they say, okay, you know, 1909's coming out. Windows 10 1909's coming out. Let's work on this so we have a good set of drivers for the update. But you built your own. So that explains why you're getting different drivers. That makes a lot of sense. I think after you do the update, go out, make sure you got the latest.
Alrighty.
All right. It really varies. You know, the biggest problem, of course, is the video card. And a lot of the problems people experience with their computers, even if it's not a video problem, are related to video card drivers. So that's the one where you really want to, you know, you may want to play around, especially if you built it yourself, by going to the manufacturer, going to NVIDIA, going to AMD, getting the latest driver. And maybe sometimes the reference driver is good. Maybe sometimes it's not. It just varies. The chat room tells me I touched my face again. Dang it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's hard not to do. Thank you for telling me. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography, drivers, riders, whatever's got a chip in it. 8888 Ask Leo. I may have created a monster here. We have a chat room, irc.twit.tv. A lot of great people in there watching the show live. Yeah, I said watching because we do a video stream that I think a lot of the chat room watches. And I said to the chat room, I said, if I touch my face, I'm trying to train myself. Good hygiene. Here comes the coronavirus. I don't want to touch my face. So tell me. That might have been a mistake. Apparently, I touch my face a lot. 88. It is not a drinking game. I just want to say that right now. It's too early in the day. 8888 Ask Leo. Website techguylabs.com. Line one, George in Victor, Montana. Hello, George.
Hey, Leo.
Welcome.
Oh, I got a small problem. How are you doing today anyway?
Oh, I'm great. If I don't touch my face anyway, I'll be fine.
Yeah, I have the same problem.
It's what everybody does, 8 times a minute. It's normal, yeah. But we got to stop if we're going to stay healthy, I guess.
Yeah.
What can I do for you, sir?
I've got that one of those Seagate, I guess they're called hard drives, plug into the computer.
Yeah.
And I got it mostly to keep photos. But what I'm curious about, when I open it up, it shows everything that's on the computer, the, you know, basic, you know, like the documents and all that. But mm-hmm. then it says Seagate and it says, you know, my wife's name and documentation and all that. What I'm curious, is all that going on the Seagate or
what? Well, it depends on what you're doing and what you're putting there. So you plugged it in. Did you put any software on the computer to copy stuff over, or how are you getting stuff over there?
I do it's an iMac computer, and I drag and drop.
Time? Are you using Time Machine? Oh, I bet that's what happened.
Yeah, I got a Time Machine. I don't know how that works.
Okay. So when you first, on a Mac, when you first plug in a new hard drive, USB hard drive, it'll say, ah, hey, nice, see that Seagate? Would you like me to use it for Time Machine? Now, I generally say no because I want to use some other system to back up to it. But if you said yes, it will, in fact, start backing up everything on your computer to the external drive. It does it in an intelligent way. Actually, I really like Time Machine. For a lot of people, this is a great solution. I bought a big old Seagate, I don't remember, I think it was a 4 terabyte drive to plug into the back of my iMac. And I said, yeah, make that the Time Machine. Anytime I do anything, change a document, whatever, it's automatically backed up. The nice thing about Time Machine is you can go back in time. That's why they call it that. So you can say, oh, I changed my novel. I changed all the characters' name Ben to Benji. I don't want to do that. And now I can go and I can have a previous version of that novel. I can have a previous version of that document. Time Machine keeps them all until it fills up, and then it starts erasing the oldest. So it's a smart backup in the sense that it won't fill up your Seagate, but it will only keep the most as many recent copies as it can store. So if your external drive is bigger than your internal drive, you'll have multiple copies. Yeah, that's great. You'll have multiple copies. So that's probably what's happening. You can find out by looking at the Time Machine settings and see if that drive is set up as a Time Machine.
Oh, if the Seagate drive is in the Time Machine?
So, yeah, that's what I think. If you're seeing, otherwise, how would you back it up? Just drag stuff over there?
Yeah. Well, the big thing my wife is worried, we know it has the photographs and stuff in it, but I wanted to know, because she's buying all this other new stuff, and she wants the, we bought the Seagate to back up everything, but I don't know if it does that.
Yeah, I would suggest, I think this is a very good choice, turning on Time Machine. I bet you it's already on, and that's why you're seeing all that stuff on there. Because you forget, right? You forget to, I changed something or I added, you know, something, and now I forgot to do the Time Machine thing. So you forget. So what I would suggest is you can go in the System Preference pane, you know, under the Apple. You collect on the menu there that says System Preferences, and there's a Time Machine System Preference. Go in there and see what the backup disk is. And then if you are using Time Machine, you could turn on the Time Machine in the menu bar, and it'll show you what it's doing. There's also an options button that can tell you what not to, you can just say, don't back up stuff. For instance, I usually exclude system files and applications. I'm going to, if I lost my hard drive, I'd reinstall those anyway. So that saves space in the Time Machine. And then it only backs up your data, like your photos. So I think for you, Time Machine, because it's dead simple, you just turn it on and forget it, is going to be the best choice. And now,
the Time Machine.
Yeah, so it's in your system preference. I bet you've already got it set up. You might want to. One other thing somebody's pointing out, I think it's not bad advice, Scooter X in our chat room is saying, if that Seagate drive you got was formatted for Windows originally, it might be better to reformat it and then turn on Time Machine. And because you want to make that drive be a Macintosh file system drive. Time Machine doesn't work well on anything else. So you want to make sure it's an HFS Plus drive. So I would right-click that and that drive and format it, then turn on Time Machine. After you format it, the first thing it'll say is, oh, I see a new drive again. You want to make it Time Machine? Check that box. I bet you already did. And now it's going to back up your photos and everything else. But I do want to emphasize, that's probably not enough. Time Machine isn't so good that it's the only backup you should have. It's probably the primary backup for everybody, but the backup, good backup strategy requires more than one backup copy, and ideally one out of the house. We call it off-site. Because if the house burnt down, you don't want to lose those photos, right?
Yeah, but I wanted also the documents and all that stored in it.
Time Machine will back that up. Yep.
It will, and to put it on the
Seagate. Yep.
Really?
Once you say that Seagate's my Time Machine drive, everything will get backed up to it.
Oh, okay. That's what we got to do. Okay, because we still use iCloud, you know.
Oh, good. So that was my next question, is if you have an off-site backup, and that if you're using Apple's Photos and you turn on iCloud backup, now you're golden. You have a local backup, and if that should fail, you know, some disaster, tornado hits the house and everything's gone, you'd still have it in the cloud, right?
Okay.
So you do want something in the cloud. That's a very, very good thing.
Because my wife wanted the Seagate, so if, you know, say the house catches on fire, we're in the woods and no...
Yeah, the problem with the Seagate is if the house catches on fire, the Seagate goes with the rest of it, right? Unless you think to grab it as you're going out the door.
That's what she was thinking, to grab that, yeah, trying to grab the computer.
You're going
to
end up grabbing other things. It's good. Hey, if she grabs it, great. But in case, I would also have an iCloud backup. That's a great idea. Or our sponsor, iDrive. I mean, there's lots of ways to get it up to the cloud. But that's a very good idea, because then you have... It's like belt and suspenders. You sound like a belt and suspenders kind of guy, George.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I'm old school.
So this is what we're talking about. You know, a belt is good. Belt and suspenders even better.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, turn on Time Machine. I would recommend, before you do it, I would recommend formatting that drive in a Apple format, just to make sure that it's fully compatible with Time Machine. You can do that just by right-clicking on it and selecting format, or you can go into the disk utility. But either way,
I just open Seagate and then right-click on it, you said?
Just, you don't even have to open it. Right-click on the icon and format it.
On the icon.
Yeah, and format it. That'll erase whatever's on there, though, remember. But that's the idea. We want to start over. And Time Machine's pretty quick. It'll start, you know, don't forget to turn that on. Once you turn that on, it'll start backing up everything.
Okay, so format it to be the Time Machine and then turn the Time Machine on.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Leo.
It's good to talk to you. I always like to support people backing up their data because, you know, I get the calls from time to time. People say, oh, I lost all the pictures. You know, our dog passed away last year and I had all these pictures and... the hard drive failed. I don't have my pictures. And it just breaks my heart. So, yeah, this is good. I'm really happy to hear you and your wife are doing this, George. That's great. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. More of your calls coming up right after this. Hope you're enjoying your weekend. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. No, I am. Always do. Love talking tech, as you probably could tell. Somebody actually said something good in the chat room, and I want to repeat it, which is... you know, I'm always saying when you're back up, I recommend my buddy Peter Krogh, who is the great photographer and the king of digital asset management. He came up with the 3-2-1 backup term. And the good news is everybody now uses this. I hear people talk about 3-2-1 backup all the time. The bad news is poor Peter doesn't get the credit, so I'm going to give it to him. 3-2-1. Real backup. If you are a wedding photographer, which Peter has done, you go and you shoot a wedding, you may not lose those photos, right? You have the one and only copy of the most important day in that couple's life, and they're not going to stage it again so that you can get another set. You better take care of those photos. The pressure is intense. So Peter recommends, and I agree with him 100%. This is for people who just, I cannot lose this data. Three copies of anything. Now, a lot of people, this happens all the time, erase the original. I got a backup. I'm set. I'm good. I backed it up to external drive, and they erased the original. I don't need that anymore. That, and now you are no longer backed up. One copy of anything is not a backup. That's the original now. Right? I don't care if the drive says has backup written on it in big red letters. It's still not a backup file. You need three copies. The original, and then maybe an external hard drive. But the two in the is very important, which is two different media. So you're not all relying all on one thing. Like, I think a hard drive is good. Sometimes people do it on a USB key. But really, you're going to get the 3-2-1 backup if you do the one, which is one is off-site. One is not next to your computer. Now you've got, you can pretty much say, it would take a miracle to lose any data here. I've got three copies. And frankly, if I were a wedding photographer, I'd probably do this. I might have two off-site backups, or I might have a backup at work and a backup at home. I might have more copies than just three. I do. Of my most valuable stuff, I have many copies, 5, 6. So, but 3-2-1 is minimum. Three copies, two different forms of media, one of them off-site. But somebody in the chat room said something really important, which is do not trust your entire backup strategy to somebody else's servers. That's what cloud backup is. You're backing it up to somebody's computer in the cloud. That shouldn't be your only backup. That's why it's 3-2-1, not 2-1-1, right? If you've got something on iCloud or you've got something on Google Photos, you should still have a local backup. What if you're on Google Photos and Google just decides all of a sudden, and they can, and it's even happened, we don't like the cut of your jib, my friend, and they kill your account. No recourse, that's gone. But that one's my backup. So you can't always assume that somebody else is going to have your best interest in mind. You do. So one of those three copies should really be something, somewhere you control. I actually, and this is kind of overkill, I do a lot of different things. But I actually have a network-attached storage, a Synology NAS, in my house that everything gets backed up to. And then I have it synchronizing with a second copy, a duplicate of itself, here at work. So, and I think a lot of photographers and others do this kind of thing. They and that's expensive, very expensive, because these NASs are not cheap. They have a lot of drives in them. They have big drives that are expensive in them. So I don't know, it's maybe several $1,000s worth of equipment to do this. But it gives me complete peace of mind. And it's not, by the way, it's not my only backup. As I said, I have a Time Machine running on my Mac. I have other, you know, the documents folder that I install on every computer, that's backed up to a cloud service. I mean, but I never have to worry. I could get ransomware at work and at home, and my data would still be safe. That's the problem. You got to think disaster. What's the worst case scenario? Am I prepared for that? John in Newport Beach, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good afternoon, Leo. Thanks for taking the call.
Thanks for calling.
I'm not a computer person, but I have a neighbor that will help me. I'm running Windows 7 Home, which I have to convert to 10, according to listening to you a couple, 3 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I take care of a 95-year-old mother, and I don't have time to listen to the whole program. So,
well, let me. You have a moment to give me, and I can walk you through it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
I can look at the show notes.
We also put in the show notes, but this is worth going through over and over again, because as of a month ago, January 14th of this year, Microsoft said we're not going to update Windows 7 anymore. Mm-hmm. No more phone support, no more updates, and most importantly, no more security fixes. Mm-hmm. And so that's why generally we say, unless you really know what you're doing, you probably shouldn't go online with Windows 7. You know, you shouldn't take email on Windows 7. You should, you know, all of the things that can bite you come in through the internet. So as long as you're not online, if you had Windows 7 in a closet that's never connected to the internet, okay, fine. But everybody else should go to Windows 10. Mm-hmm. Or some other operating system. But Windows 10, the nice thing about this, normally Microsoft charges over $100 for the upgrade. Right. They have not turned off the free upgrade. Okay. When Windows 10 first came out, what was that now, 3-4 years ago? They said for the first year, anybody using Windows 7 can upgrade for free, or Windows 8 or 8.11 could upgrade free. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, at the end of that year, they announced, okay, it's over. You got to buy it now. A lot of people bought it, but they never turned off the feature. I think they did this on purpose. They're just not publicizing it because they want you to be safe. That's actually more important that everybody be using Windows 10 than they get the revenue from that extra sales, which I slow clap Microsoft. That's the right thing to do. So it is still possible to take that Windows 7 machine and upgrade it to Windows 10. I know a lot of people say, oh, I don't want Windows 10. Windows 10's fine. It looks a lot like Windows 7. You're not going to be as discombobulated as you might think. It's really worth having a secure operating system. So here's the tricky part, and we will put a link in the show notes. You've got to get, if you go to Microsoft, they have a downloadable version of the Windows 10 installer. If you Google Microsoft Windows Media Creation Tool, you'll go to that page. You can download it, put it on a USB key. You have to convince your computer to boot from that and then install on top of Windows 7, and you're good to go. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So that's the only trick is, and that's the only thing that you might want to go to the website just to get the links. But you're going to get the, do you have a 16 gigabyte or I think even 8 would work, but a 16 would be better, USB key lying around?
A USB key is like a stick?
A thumb drive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. 16.
Yep.
Okay. I'll make sure I do.
I think eight's enough. I can't remember, but 16 is definitely enough.
For backup before I do it?
No. This is what the Windows installer is going to go on that.
Oh, okay.
So when you download the Microsoft Windows Create Media Creation Tool, it will give you instructions on how to turn that file. It's a .iso file. How to turn that file, copy that file onto the Windows, onto the thumb drive. And now that thumb drive is a Windows installer, Windows 10 installer.
Okay.
And you're going to have to change. Lon says 8 gigs is fine. Okay. I seem to remember 8 gigs. I want to make sure you have enough. So 8 gigs would be fine. Now what you have to do, and this is the only tricky part, and it's different for many. Every computer kind of does this differently. You got to tell the computer, I want you to boot from this USB key.
Okay.
Usually what you do, remember how you go in the setup when the computer's on, you press the shift key or the F11 key or the escape key. It's different on every mm-hmm. computer. And then it comes up with the black screen, the setup screen.
Right.
That's where you do that. You're going to change the boot order so the USB key will boot.
Okay.
And then it walks you through it. And it'll say, oh, I see you have Windows 7. You want me to upgrade it? And you say, yeah, please. And then as long as your Windows 7 is authenticated, Windows 10 should authenticate, and now you have Windows 10. If you want, at that point, you can erase the hard drive and do anything you want. Windows 10 is always entitled on that machine.
Okay. And you're always saying about the backup. I just do eBay, and I've only got a small amount of stuff on the computer. Can I back up on a stick?
Yeah.
Okay.
In fact, once you do this install... Oh, yeah. Well, you can't use the install key. Oh, wait a minute. You don't even have to bother. Okay. So when I download, all right, somebody's saying, Blake's saying, with a download, you can just run it. And you don't have to even put on a USB key.
Oh.
So that's good.
Okay.
Microsoft will have the instructions on its website.
Very good.
And then, yeah, back up to an external drive, USB key, whatever, yeah. Thank you for taking care of your mom. That's awesome.
Thank you very much.
That's awesome. You're a good boy. Take care. All right, John. All right. Take care.
Thank you, Leo.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, the photo segment with Chris Marquardt. Chris Marquardt is here. He's not really. He's up in Siberia, but we've recorded his segment ahead of time because we don't want to spend a week without our favorite photographer. He leads great photo workshops at discoverthetopfloor.com. and is a podcaster, Tips from the Top Floor. It actually has a number of podcasts, including the Future of Photography podcast. And you can find all that at chrismarquardt.com. Hello, Chris.
Hello. How's it going today?
It's going great. You know, Chris, I'm thinking, remember I went to the Sony mirrorless platform, did a lot of Sony.
Mm-hmm.
There's one thing missing that drives me crazy, especially as I travel. I don't have GPS built into that camera.
Mm.
It bothers me.
You know what? I have GPS. Well, of course, our smartphones have GPS built in and you take pictures with them, but usually the GPS location is part of that. I have GPS on my big DSLRs and I don't use it that much.
Oh, interesting. Because I was thinking, I have a Canon 5D Mark IV, which has GPS built into it. I also have some very nice lenses. I think on my next trip, we're going out your way. We're going to Germany in June. That maybe I should switch back to the Canon. I'm going back and forth. I don't know. You're right. You know, if I just take a single camera phone shot everywhere I go, I'll have that GPS.
Yeah, but then you have to kind of marry those two together, and that's kind of difficult. It really, for me, the GPS thing, I used to do it religiously, but I don't really have that much use for it. I've never really found a very good use for it other than finding the tracks that I went, but that's not that interesting for me. Other people might have a completely different opinion on that.
Here's the reason you don't care. Because you're a professional photographer. You take pictures all the time. I take them on trips. I kind of want to, you know, most of the apps I use, including Flickr, the great photo sharing site, and I use a new travel app called Polar Steps, take that GPS location and put the pictures on the map. And so I like that. And I realized with my last trip, I didn't have any of that. And Polar Steps didn't know where to put any of this stuff. I had to do it manually, so. Anyway, you should, by the way, that is my new travel app, and I want everybody to start using it so we can make it the Instagram of travel photography. It's Polar Steps.
And then, by the way, it also eats a battery, and I don't like that, especially when I'm out in the cold, like in Siberia.
Are you talking about Polar Steps, or are you talking about the GPS in my camera?
No, the GPS in the camera.
Oh, good point. Yeah, because the radio has to be on. So this week you're going to do another little ABC mini assignment.
Yeah, and we do these for those of you out there who kind of are hungry for getting some food in terms of assignments, because we do these monthly assignments
or people like me who never take pictures unless I'm on the road. I got to get in the habit of shooting all the time.
And some of those don't need much time, so consider them more like assignment snacks. And the first one, we call them ABC assignment because they start with the letter A, B, and C. This one, the A is arranged.
Arranged.
So, you know, we often take pictures of what we find. We go somewhere, we look, and then we just take pictures of what's there, and that's kind of the normal impulse. But how about doing a little set, like build a little tabletop set? Find a background, find some props, find a subject.
Tiny town. I want to do a tiny town.
For example, do a product shot of something. And there's just lots of things for backgrounds. You might have some cardboard there, or maybe some, what are they called? Fairy lights, little lights on a string. So many different things. Even crumpled up aluminum foil in the background with lights on it. If that's blurred in the background, is going to look nice. So there's a lot of ways to work with arranged photos as opposed to the found photos.
Good for the winter time too. You don't have to go outside.
Oh, totally. And this is our A, and the B is blur. Because, you know, the cameras are, of course, try to get everything in focus and get your eyes of your subject crisp. And so this assignment needs a camera where you can turn that off and use manual focus, because this goes back to what we did last week, the abstract assignment. It's kind of similar because the moment you take the focus out, you blur something instead of it being tack sharp, you deliberately throw it out of focus, then you make it into more of an abstract. Maybe the shape is still kind of recognizable, so the viewer a little bit of guesswork there, but just a clear subject in front of a simple uniform background in a blurry cloud. You'd be surprised how cool that looks. And then you can print those out, hang them up in your wall. And I've seen so many photos that deliberately work with the out of focus and not the autofocus, the out of focus. And that yields some really interesting results that you wouldn't get any other way. So blur.
I like this idea. I like this. Okay. And then the third. What's C?
Last but not least, C as in close. Play with distance. That is, let's say you have one of those new smartphones with the normal telephoto, normal wide-angle, ultra-wide-angle lens. Play with distance as opposed to zooming, right? So change your distance to what you're shooting with, with different of these lenses, different of these cameras. Maybe for half an hour, switch to your ultra-wide camera on your smartphone, or put some lens on your mirrorless camera, and then take your photo as you would normally, but then take a second one by going a bit closer and then taking that. Because you will see when you look at those later that this is a great exercise to learn what distance does with the different with a subject, how that changes. It's a very different thing from just zooming in. Zooming in doesn't get you closer, but moving in gets you closer, and that is when things start changing. Hollywood knows that. They move the cameras. They don't zoom a lot. They have the cameras on dollies and move them because that's way more interesting. And the same is true for your still photography.
I saw one day a thing on Hollywood motion picture photography where the guy was talking about lens angles and using wide angle to give you a claustrophobic feeling, getting really in tight mm-hmm. to the actor so their face fills the screen, and then using mm-hmm. longer lenses for group shots or more distance. And ever since I saw that, I've been thinking about that when I watch a motion picture, and you can see how they literally change the lens to change the feeling in a scene. Yep. It's really an eye-opener.
And it's important to experience that, to play with that, because only then will you learn what these different zoom settings, the different focal lengths do to your photos, what the distance does to your photos and how they feel. And you will see if you play with the distance, if you take even the normal shots, if you take a picture with your smartphone of, let's say, a price tag in Best Buy, you take that same photo, but get closer. Just add that second shot, and maybe not. Okay, price tag might be a bit boring.
No. That's true. That's what's great about all of these assignments that you give us, is you don't have to go somewhere special. You can just, if it's a price tag, it's a price tag. You can find a way to make that interesting. Yeah.
So arranged, blur, and close. That's our ABC for this week.
Arranged, blur, and close. Now, if you're in our Flickr group, you really should be. It's free, flickr.com. The group is called the Tech Guy Group. And there's something like 13,000 people in this group.
Oh, yes.
It's an amazing group. Thank you for all of you in there. I don't make any money off of it, but I think it's just a great way for us to camera buffs to share our photos. And you can, if you're in there, you can also participate in our monthly assignment, which is to take a picture illustrating the word, the concept, kitten. Tag it TG Kitten. Post it on the Tech Guy group. And when Chris gets back from his jaunt to Lake Baikal in Siberia, he'll review and pick three of the best. Have a great trip, Chris. And
thank you.
We'll see you next week. DiscoverTheTopFloor.com to learn more about his workshops. And, of course, our Flickr group, it's easy to find, is flickr.com. But you do need to join the Tech Guy group. It's just an extra click. So join the Tech Guy group. You'll know you're in the right place. I think it's like 30,000 members. It's huge. And you can browse. Once you're there, you can browse all the other submissions for our monthly photo contest and lots of other great pictures. Flickr's a great photo sharing site. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. More calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number. Line 4, Carlos Torrance, California. Hello, Carlos.
Hey, Leo. Good afternoon. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing well. Be better if my internet was working.
That's a bad thing.
Yeah, and you know what's been going on? I'm very patient, but it's been going on for almost a year now.
Well, that's a little too patient, if you ask me. Wait a minute. Yeah. Is it up and down, fast and slow, or is it just off?
What it is, it starts off great. I get about 350 megabytes on average download.
Wow! Okay.
But it's cable modem. And the problem is, it'll start off for a couple of minutes.
Oh.
Great, everything's fine.
Yeah.
And then what happens, for example, say I go to YouTube, and you know how it loads all the...
Let me guess. You know, are you on Comcast?
How'd you know?
Because it's Comcast-erific. They have something called burst mode, which I'm of the opinion is to fool benchmarks. They start really fast, and then it slows down. How slow is slow?
It stops. It completely stops
loading. It stops completely.
Completely.
Oh, that's not right. Burst mode will often start much faster than your, you know. What are they quoting you as your internet speed?
I think it's.
What are you buying?
I think it's around 200 or something like that.
So, yeah, note that you have 200. But it's even faster than that when it first starts out. That's the burst mode.
Yeah.
There is something going wrong, however, because normally what burst mode, you pay for 200 down, you get 350 megabits for the first, you know, minute, and then it calms down. And you can even see this. Go to the – my favorite speed test is from DSLReports.com.
Okay.
Go there, click the speed test link, and it shows you a graph. So you can actually see the burst. You can see it starts real high, and then it goes, but it shouldn't go all the way down to zero. And it consistently does that?
Yep, every time. And they've tried, and they came out here quite a few times.
They've come out, and they can't identify it?
No, they change out, because what they say is, well, the speed is there. But I tell them, I said, look, hang out a few minutes, and you'll see. So they look at it, and they have this little machine that looks like a, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a signal tester. They're actually looking at the actual signal on the cable.
Yeah, and they're saying, well, everything on our end looks good. So I said, well, how do you explain that after about 5-10 minutes?
That's not good. That's bad.
I know.
This doesn't even look good.
I know.
So they don't. Are they in your house when they're doing this, or are you on the phone with them?
No, they're in the house,
and they're saying, "Oh yeah, it's fine."
Yeah, well, they changed out the modem a few times. They've rewired the home.
Yeah, because that's what I would have suspected. Now they got to go outside. Have they done the outside?
They did.
Okay.
And they went to, there's some kind of a distribution box.
Yeah. So they went to the hub there, and they, because what it often can be is a bad connection in there. They do, you know, they splice you in, and this, if the splice is bad, that can sometimes be it. I've seen them replace those splices. Did they get in there?
Yeah, they did. They were in there. Every time they come out here, they go in there, they check everything out. There's, because it's a small apartment complex.
This,
maybe 15 units, I think.
Oh, wait a minute. Okay. And you're all on it at the same time, huh?
Yeah.
So, this is why, by the way, here we are in the greatest nation in the world. We invented the internet, but we have among the worst internet among the developed world, and that's because we have these monopolies. It's not like you can go, is it Comcast or Spectrum?
It's actually, you know what, Spectrum.
Spectrum, okay. It's not like you can go from Spectrum to Comcast. You can't. You don't have the choice. You only, the only cable internet provider, the only cable provider in your neighborhood is Spectrum. They all have a monopoly, a local regional monopoly. Now, you might be able to go to the phone company. The problem there is the phone company is usually much slower. DSL, due to the limitations of what they can do, isn't very good. You're only, and you're, if you have this, praise, hallelujah, some neighborhoods will have a third choice, will have a fiber optic.
I've looked into all that.
And you don't have it.
It would be extremely slow. And I don't have any other option. My only other option is unfortunately, the DSL.
I think it's something like 80% of the country has two options, period.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, something's going to happen because there's going to be 5G is coming along and, that means, and the reason for 5G, as far as Verizon and AT&T are concerned, T-Mobile, is we want to get into that residential internet market. So that's one thing that's going to change. You're going to have a wireless option that's pretty fast. Still won't be 200 megabits, probably, but it might be better than what you got, which is nothing.
And the unfortunate part is I don't rely on my home internet anymore. Now, to when I stream your podcast or something like that, I have to do it off the network, off the cell network, because my internet just stopped.
Right.
So I'll...
No, yeah, and I can't believe they haven't fixed this after a year. This is ridiculous. It's infuriating. Spectrum and Torrance, get your act together.
Yeah.
That does not reflect well on Spectrum. And we, by the way, we have a lot of listeners in your neck of the woods.
Yeah.
And I hope maybe that the boss, the general manager of Spectrum Torrents, is listening. Fix Carlos's cable. This is terrible. There is one other thing coming, and I'm starting to see people say, well, wait till Starlink comes along. Elon Musk is launching as fast as he can satellites, low Earth orbit satellites. Yeah. And astronomers, amateur astronomers especially, are hating it because they're worried there's ultimately going to be more than 12,000 satellites. But he's going to offer satellite internet to every corner of the world. North America will be one of the first areas to get it, maybe even, believe it or not, this year. He's launching them that fast. So that's why Spectrum needs to get their act together. They've got a monopoly, or at best a duopoly, right now, and it's not going to last. 5G's coming. Starlink's coming. There's going to be other satellite internet coming. They're going to, thank goodness, it's criminal that here in this country, thanks to the beautiful auspices of the Federal Communications Commission, that we have a monopoly situation for internet, which, and you know, when you get a monopoly, what do you get? No competition, lousy service, overpriced, junky internet. And that's what most people in this country are getting, and it drives me nuts. We invented the darn thing. Much of our economy runs on it now. And then, of course, companies like Spectrum and AT&T and Comcast did everything they could, going state by state to the state legislators to ban municipal Wi-Fi, because cities came along and said, well, if they can't do it, we'll do it. And many states, I think 24 states, that's illegal now. The cities can't offer municipal Wi-Fi. Well, that would compete with our fine service. Yeah. The last thing they want is competition. The good news is they're going to get it. Right now, though, boy, I don't know if they've come out and they can't fix it.
You know what? The only thing I can think of is my Ethernet card. That's the only thing I haven't changed out.
Well, it could be, but try a different cable. I mean, you only have one computer?
Oh, no. It happens on all computers.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not the Ethernet card on that computer. It's probably happening on your phone, too, right?
Yeah.
No, so, yeah. And have you changed your router?
Twice.
Yeah. And you've plugged an Ethernet cable into the router, so you know it's not the Wi-Fi. It's happening on the wired network as well.
Correct. I've done the direct Cat5 cable right into the desktop into the different computer that does the same exact thing.
Yeah. I think you've done everything. I think it's up to Spectrum, and it's shocking that Spectrum has done such a poor job of customer service. What do they walk away saying? It's fine here. We think it's fine. Is that what they're saying?
Yeah, that's basically what they tell me. And I mean, sometimes, I'll be honest with you, I feel I know more about the system than
I think you do. I can't fix it if they can't. I don't know what the answer is, but it's just infuriating. No, I don't think it's Spectrum in general. I think it's in his house, but they're not fixing it. It's either at the hub or, you know, the head end or... Yeah, it's a weak signal. It's weird that it starts fast and then ends up zero. Yeah, it's something, but it's got to be their wiring. That's my point. It's got to be something they're doing. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We talk smartphones. We talk smart watches. We talk not touching your face. 8888-ASK-LEO. It's a long story. That's the phone number. If you want to talk high tech, I'd love to talk with you. On line four right now, Nick is in Pasadena. He's our next caller. Hi, Nick.
Hey, how are you doing today?
I'm well. How are you?
So, I'm doing fine. Hey, I wanted to touch base on that guy that was having his problems with Spectrum.
Yes, our last caller, yeah.
Right, and you hit it right on the head. It is burst mode, but the problem is, I remember overhearing him say that he lived in a condominium complex.
Yes.
He's on a shared medium coming into that complex.
Right.
So what they're doing is they're pumping like a gig into that complex, and everybody's on it. So,
but why would it? Yeah, I thought about that. As soon as he said apartment complex, I thought, oh, boy. Yeah, that's going to be shared connection. But why would it start fast and go to, and not slow, but go to zero every single time?
Somebody in that network or somebody in that condo complex is.
No.
You remember the old condo?
No. But why would it start fast and go to zero? Even if everybody in the condo complex, it would just get very slow, and it wouldn't start fast. It would start slow, right?
It's the node he's on. The node needs to be replaced. It's a congested node. And AT&T used to have these problems with these routers called Redback routers. They were supposed to handle like 3,500 customers, but the moment you put 1,500 customers on them, they started getting congested and having issues.
Right.
It was a firmware issue, and that's the problem with his. He needs to demand an engineer come out and go to the node. Trust me.
I do. You sound very did you work in this business?
I've worked in this business for over 25 years.
Yeah, you sound like you know what you're talking about.
Yeah, he's got a congested node that's having issues. They need to either replace the node or they need to upgrade the node to give him the bandwidth speed that he's paying for.
Yeah, but would it go to zero? Would it just like nothing?
I've never seen it go to nothing, but I have seen it go down to a crawl. But nothing leads me to believe that maybe he's got something. You know, maybe he's got a rodent strike on a coax inside the complex or something that's kind of grounding out.
Right.
Or you
intrigue me with this firmware flaw, because that could also do it. If the router itself, and this is the Spectrum router, has a flaw in it that it could cut off, that would maybe explain it. I understand it could go to 17 kilobits a second or less, but it shouldn't go to 0 kilobits a second.
Right.
And
my connection at my house is Spectrum, and they upgraded the node where we were supposed to have 100 megs, and we were having issues. They came out, they replaced it. I now have a rock solid 400 meg connection.
No, that's why I asked him. Did they go out to the head end? Did they do anything there? Did they replace anything?
You have to remember that the technicians are based on, they're based on how many, you know, good jobs they can do in a day. So they're jumping from one to one.
Yep.
And that's their management that's on them for this. You know, you have to maintain a level of efficiency in your job work. So they're going to come out, they're going to put their Sunrise or their JDSU meter or whatever meter it is, they're going to plug it in, they're going to turn it on and go, nope, connection's good, and on to the next one.
That's right.
Without looking deeper in. That's why I'm saying he's got to demand that an engineer come out to the complex and take a look.
I asked him if they checked, but you know, maybe they might have gone to the wiring closet for the condo. What they generally, this thing is outside in the street, right?
Right. And might be even farther up in the street where it may be, you know, a mile away. That's where the head out is, where the main node is that's branching out to everybody.
Right.
So,
yeah, I've done this with my own network cable guy. I've gone out to the street with him. There's a cement box. It says Comcast in my case on it. And he pries it up. And inside, it's kind of primitive looking. It looks like just a wire and then splice coming out of that wire into my house. And so that's the first thing to check, and then maybe you have to follow that bigger wire down to the distribution node. What will be there? Do they use a specialized router? What do they use there?
No, it's oh my gosh, I don't even know what they're using anymore. I don't work for Spectrum anymore, but
is it passive, or is there something going on? Is there software in it?
Yeah. It's basically hardware with software built into it.
Yeah, it's like a CSU, DSU, or something.
Juniper
like that.
And stuff.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. A great tool that he can use to show the technicians or the engineers that come out is PingPlotter. Run PingPlotter so it shows where his network loss is and the latency issues that he's having, and say, okay, explain this to me.
Perfect.
You know,
put him on the spot.
Yep. Right. Your average technician is going to come out and look at that and look at it, you know, like a deer in the headlights.
Right.
But the engineer should at least know, okay, yeah, we've got an issue. And maybe, you know, trace routing showing, look, this is where the issue is. This is where we're having the latency. It may be deeper into their network than just the node at the street. It may be farther in.
Yeah, clearly there's a problem. PingPlotter has a two-week free trial, so you don't have to buy it to try it. PingPlotter.com, and then you can and you have something then that says, "Look, I'm not a nitwit."
Easy proof.
That's part of the problem too. I know when the cable guy comes to the door, 90% of the calls he's making are people who have unplugged their computer and said it's not working. So generally, they don't jump right to trusting your report. So having a PingPlotter printout and saying, look, see, we'll give, then maybe they'll take you a little more seriously. So that's very good advice. Yeah. I really appreciate it. Thank you for calling, Nick.
You're welcome. Love your show. Been listening to for many, many years.
Thank you. Anytime you hear something like this or you want to correct me, please call in.
I will.
I really, it's very helpful. Like I said at the beginning of the show, we're all in this together. I'm not the I'm not the be-all, end-all. I can't answer a lot of questions. But between us all, I think we can probably solve almost anything. And, yeah, that's, you know, I did ask, did they check, did they go out to the street? But what they may have done is gone to the condo's wire closet and said, well, it looks fine at this point. It isn't that point. You got to go farther down the line. You got to find where that's dropping off. Having a printout that says, look, see how this drops off to nothing will be very helpful. You might also check with your neighbors because if it's happening to you, it's happening to everybody else in the condo complex. That's the other diagnostic I should have asked him about. Is anybody else in the apartment having a problem? If it is down the road, it's going to happen to everybody. If it's just your apartment, it's only going to happen to you, right? Thank you, Nick. 8888, ask Leo. That's the phone number if you want to talk about this or anything else. It just makes me nuts that, you know, it's not just the internet. It's everything. We have too many companies have gotten so big and powerful that they don't have to compete. They may be monopolies. They may be duopolies. But they're so big, they don't have to compete. And so the service goes down, the price goes up, and it's happening in so many different areas, a lot of tech areas. And it just drives me nuts. It's just, we deserve, don't you think we deserve better than that? 8888, ask Leo, that's the phone number. I think we defend the right of every American to make as much money as possible. Yeah, that's the American way. The Horatio Alger story. Make as much money as you can. But when it starts to be at the price of everybody else suffering, and we start to say, maybe you're making enough. Maybe a little competition would be a good thing. I do think we're going to get some competition, I think, from 5G. And I think it'll be very interesting to see what these satellite internet networks like Starlink, like Elon Musk's Starlink, that could change everything. You know, when Google started rolling out gigabit fiber in neighborhoods, all of a sudden, companies that had said for years, our customers don't want high-speed internet. They don't want gigabit. All of a sudden, they're offering gigabit at a low cost. Competition's a good thing. It drives the prices down. It increases innovation, keeps consumers happy. And, you know, guess what? They're still making plenty of money. Not taking their money away. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo, the phone number. Let's go back to the phones. What do you say? Line 3, Mark in Los Angeles. Hello, Mark. Did I push the button right? I did. Mark, are you there? Hello. Well, he asked, it says on the computer, he wants to ask about resetting the motherboard on computers. Tell you what, I'll put you on hold, Mark. Maybe Kim can wake you up. We'll go to line 1, Richard in West LA. Hello, Richard.
Hi, Leo. Good to talk with you again.
Nice to hear from you.
I've had iDrive for a few years, long before they became your sponsor, in fact.
Good.
And I'm wondering if when I back up, and I have a habit of doing it every Friday to make sure it happens, are the pictures on Picasa also backed up by iDrive?
Only the local stuff is.
I'm sorry, I don't know what that means.
So Picasa, which, by the way, I have bad news for you, has been discontinued by Google for about 5 years.
I know.
Picasa had a web component. So now it's Google Photos, but there was Picasa Web. Those photos are not being backed up by iDrive. They're in the web. They're on the cloud already. So iDrive can't even see them. Anything on your hard drive locally, yes. But you should check your iDrive configuration to make sure, because there's, as with any cloud backup, there are going to be defaults, like don't back up system files, don't back up applications, don't back up temp files. And you should look at those defaults to make sure that they match what your expectations are. A sponsor many years ago was Carbonite, and by default, they didn't back up large media files like movies and music. And people got bit by that because they never checked. So it's a good idea to check to make sure it's backing up what you think it's backing up and that it's not backing up anything you don't need. So if you've got Picasa, a Picasa folder, if you've got the Picasa app, those files, those photos are being stored, I believe, separately on the hard drive. They will be backed up.
Okay,
I'm surprised you're still using it. I would have. I went to Picasa.google.com, and if anything you stored in Picasa Web has been moved to Picasa Photos, Google's retired. That's a nice way of putting it. They retired the Picasa app. Your Picasa Web albums, data, tags, captions, and comments are in the album archive. You can continue to use the desktop application. There'll be no future updates. So it looks like I would browse around on your hard drive. I can't remember where it's been so long since I've used it, but I can't remember where Picasa stored the photos. So what you want to do is make sure that folder is being backed up. Some applications store do weird things. They store data in a database. You know, Windows itself does this with what they call the registry. It's a whole bunch of stuff stored in this blob, this single file, settings and so forth, that, you know, you can't see into it. That should be backed up, though, of course. And that's the same thing if Picasa. I'm looking in. Picasa stores data in three locations. The photo files. There are also Picasa.ini files and the, quote, Picasa database. It does sound like the originals are stored as photos that you can see, which means they'd be backed up. But if you want Picasa.ini files backed up, and if you want the Picasa database backed up, then you may have to explicitly tell iDrive to do that.
The reason I'm asking is that all of a sudden, about 2 weeks ago, some of the pictures that I had on Picasa disappeared altogether.
Hey.
Most of them were black and white, as I recall, but not all. Some of them were color.
So when you say on Picasa, I'm it's a little ambiguous. Do you mean in the Picasa program when you open it on your computer?
Yes.
Okay. That's an interesting question. Remember that Picasa for a long time would copy those photos to the web, Picasa Web. Were you using Picasa Web?
I don't think so, no.
Okay, that doesn't ring a bell. All right. Those photos will have disappeared. In fact, Picasa Web has disappeared, and they've become part of photos.google.com. The local photos, they probably are backed up on iDrive, but how would you get them? It'd be an interesting question of where you would pluck them from on iDrive. They may just be photo files stored in the on iDrive. They may be in the Picasa database. The database is, in theory, a redundant copy of both the photos, any changes you made, metadata, name tags, geotags, things like that. But because it's in a database, it's like the registry. It's just a blob. You can't see into the blob. Look in your Picasa user profile. It's been so long since I've used Picasa, and I don't have a copy anywhere here I can check. I'm just not sure where it is. In theory, even if you lost the Picasa database, it's merely a copy itself of the stuff in the .ini files and the photos. So you should have all of those. I'm not sure why they would have disappeared. I guess my recommendation is try a restore from iDrive and see if you get them back. And at some point, you probably should consider going to a more modern alternative than Picasa. Are you on Windows?
Yeah, I'm on. We see, the reason I used Picasa originally, and I know it faded out, but Google dropped it, is that I could edit it. I could change
right.
The color and all that. It was really fun. And then I heard on your show, I've listened to for 100 years, that Picasa was gone with the wind, so to speak.
Yeah.
But it still worked, and I could print from Picasa. I still
right.
can print whatever's there. I can make prints of what's on Picasa.
It gripes me a little bit because Google bought it and for a while maintained it and then got tired of it. They're like a five-year-old with a brand new toy, and they got bored with it. And they just put it up, they killed it, which leaves a lot of us in the lurch. There are good free alternatives. I'd look at something like ACDC, ACDSEE. It's a free alternative, something like that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's frustrating because Picasa was great. It worked great. We didn't need to replace it. What do you, let me ask the chat room what you use. I mean, AC/DC is free. It's very good. It may not have all of the editing features of Picasa. Is there a free alternative, I guess, that's as good as Picasa? AC/DC is pretty darn good for free. It has editors. It does. It keeps track of your photos. It would let you print them. Yeah, Google Photos is, of course, what Google wants you to replace it with, but it doesn't have as many editing features as Picasa did. Oh, that's funny, Solbu. I hope they were okay. Yeah, Snapseed's good. Actually, what Google Photos did is they bought another company or bought or used the code from Aviary, I think. So they have some editing, but I don't think it's nowhere near enough. It's nowhere near Snapseed. Snapseed is amazing, and that's free. UrfanView is like AC/DC, is a very good choice, too. No, he doesn't want cloud. He wants local. This when Picasa went dead, I had a lot of calls about this. People loved Picasa. And there isn't, you know, it's really frustrating that Google put him out of there. They did the same thing with Nick. Oh, yeah, it looks like AC/DC is no longer free, or maybe there's a free in the paid version. Yeah, there's, Darkroom's actually pretty good. I like Darkroom. Or actually, no, I was thinking of Darktable. Isn't Darktable the open source one? Does Darktable have a Windows version, though? I don't think so. I really am starting to think Darktable is gonna be the way to go on Linux. Yeah, it doesn't look like, oh, they do a Windows version. Wait a minute, let me see. Yeah, there's a Windows installer. Anybody use Darktable on Windows? No, Photoshop Express isn't free, is it? Oh, I was thinking of Elements. Photoshop Express is iOS, though. It's not Windows, is it? Oh, it is on Windows. Good choice. All right. Thank you, Scooter X, as I say all the time. So now we're comparing notes in the chat room. When Picasa went away, and this has been several years now, so mad at Google, because Picasa, P-I-C-A-S-A, was a wonderful free photo editing program. Actually, originally it wasn't free. Google bought it, made it free. Maybe that was the problem. After a while, Google tired of it, as they often do, and they killed it. They moved everybody to Google Photos, but it isn't the same. No. But there are a lot of alternatives, free alternatives and paid alternatives for Windows, actually for Mac and Linux, too, that I think do many of the things Picasa did. Picasa was great because it let you organize your photos in a way that was easy, intuitive, obvious. You could print them, as our caller said. You could tag them. Just people really loved it. It hit the sweet spot, and software occasionally will do this, where it did exactly what a big subset of people wanted. It was just right. Not too much, not too little, just right. It's the Goldilocks of photo apps. There are other programs out there. I mentioned AC/DC, which I used for years. It's A-C-D-S-E-E. Get its little pun. But there are other good choices. Actually, I don't think AC/DC is free anymore. It looks like they're starting to charge for it. IrfanView, I-R-F-A-N view, is still free. That's always free. Photoshop Express is free for iOS, Android, and Windows. That's from the folks who do the big boy of photo editing programs, Photoshop, Adobe. That might be one to look at. You can get that in the Windows Store on your Windows 10 machine, Photoshop Express. There is a program that is open source. A lot of people are starting to use it. I see now there's a Windows version of Darktable, which is free and open source. And I've used it on Linux, but I see there's a Windows version. And a lot of people, like serious photo editing people, use Raw Therapy, which has the worst name. Really is a terrible name. But but it comes from the fact that many professionals shoot their photos in something called Camera Raw, not JPEG. And Camera Raw, if you're a professional, is often the format. You need a program to even see it, and then you edit it. Raw Therapy is free. It's therapy spelled E-E. So it's Raw, T-H-E-R-A-P-E-E. Terrible name. It's free, and it runs on Windows, Mac, and Linux. I've used it only on Linux. I like it a lot. Not the easiest interface in the world, but certainly it's not a good choice for Picasa. People love Picasa because what they loved about Picasa was how simple it was, how easy it was. Raw Therapy is more like Photoshop or Lightroom. It's a power tool. I think that's probably my choice. It's between Darktable and Raw Therapy for raw editing on Linux. And I think Raw Therapy is the one I'm going to go with. It's in active development. It's open source and free. It handles raw files from almost every camera, which is great. They say it's targeted at everybody from enthusiast newcomers to professional photographers. You'd have to be pretty enthusiastic as a newcomer. It's not, yes, you know, but it's got all the tools in there that you'd want. I agree. One of our chatters said, oh, you got to get Raw Therapy. And I agree. It's free. And it's free. It's free. One chatter is pointing out that Photoshop Express is nice for editing, but it isn't an asset manager. So, these programs, and Picasa was great at digital, what they call digital asset management, and organizing your photos, putting it in folders, tagging them, finding them. That's really what Picasa was about, and it had some small, limited editing tools. Then there's programs like Raw Therapy, which are all about editing and don't do a lot of digital asset management. Lightroom is the program professionals use often for photo management. Photoshop Express apparently does not do a good job of organizing your photos, but is a good editor. So that would be a good free editor, and then maybe use IrfanView for organizing. So that's two programs to replace Picasa Web. But it was that good. It really was. It's sad to me that it couldn't survive. It could have. I think on its, as a standalone, it could have. But in that giant complex of programs that Google offers, it was just one more program they'd lost interest in. Gloria in North Hollywood's next. Hi, Gloria. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. It's me again.
Yes. How are things on Sunset Boulevard?
Oh, no. This is...
No, I'm joking. I'm pretending you're Gloria Swanson. Hi, Gloria. Hi, Gloria. I know who you are. Welcome.
Yeah, I guess so. All the times I've called and asked those
questions. Yeah, we love you. Yeah. What can I do for you?
I just heard you tell a caller that just about anybody could go from Windows 7 to Windows 10 upgrade.
It's free.
I know that, but a couple of years ago I tried that and it didn't work. I tried it for like 3 weeks.
Huh.
I left the computer on once day and night.
Oh, it never authenticated is what you're saying.
Yeah. Well, it never upgraded. Yeah. However
so,
you call it.
So it's different now. What's, so the thing is... Here's the theory behind it. So you're still on a Windows 7 machine?
Yeah.
You really do want to upgrade. I hate to say it, but you really do.
But if I started out with Vista and then upgraded to 7, maybe that's the problem.
Could be. I haven't talked to people who've done that. It might be that it has to have a full Windows 7 license.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I'll put a link in the show notes to an article, but let me give you the what's different now. So... the way it works now, you have a active, and you should check to make sure that Windows 7 is active. It's authenticated. I'm sure it is, or you would have gotten a notice by now saying, hey, it's not authenticated. So, but you could check in this, just in, you know, about Windows, you could see it's authenticated. If it is, then in theory, and this, everybody's told me this works, you can download the Windows 10 installer, get it from Microsoft, don't get it from some third party.
Right.
Download the Windows 10 installer, run it. Now, I've been telling people you got to put it on a thumb drive and reboot, but apparently you don't have to. You just download it and run it. And then Microsoft will just install Windows 10 on top of your existing installation, just the same way it put Windows 7 on your Vista.
Oh.
Right? Then, and this is what you do, you're hoping, you're waiting, it should just authenticate automatically. You should just say, oh, yeah, that's fine. At that point, you own Windows 10.
Okay.
You have what Microsoft is calling now an entitlement, which means even if you got a new hard drive or erased the old hard drive and put a clean download of Windows 10 on it, it would still activate because Microsoft's keeping track of who owns Windows 10, and you now are in that group, that lucky group. So Cosmic Ray said he went from Windows 2000 to Windows XP to Windows 7 and then Windows 10. He skipped he skipped Vista apparently, but he was able to do that. So now of course you're going to back up your data, but you do that anyway, Gloria, because I know you're careful.
Maybe. Let me see. How can I say this? I'm going to try it. Of course, I can't try it now because, like,
yeah, you're busy. You're on the phone.
No. Last time I called, I told you my computer died, and I was trying to figure something else out.
Did you get it back?
Well, somebody's going to help me. This guy's an engineer, and I'm going to bring it to him. The thing is that I can go in to the CMOS and the BIOS and all those kind of things and see things. I just can't. I guess.
Yeah, you won't. I don't think you're going to need to do that because, as some have reminded me, you should just be able to download the installer and run it. It'll say, you're running Windows 7. I'm going to reboot. Hold on. And then go right into the installer. So try that. Back up just in case something goes wrong. Nice to talk to you, Gloria. Thank you for letting me be myself again. Thank you, Lady Laura, our musical director. We really appreciate what a great job you do. Spinning the discs, pushing the buttons, screaming at me when I don't show up. Thank you, Lady Laura. Thank you to Kim Schaffer, our phone angel. She does such a good job getting you on the air. I appreciate it. Thanks to all of you who called and all of you who listened. We couldn't do the show if you didn't, because the boss would fire me. So, I mean, I could sit here talking into a microphone. It's not connected to anything, but that wouldn't be very fun come the end of the month, and then paycheck doesn't come. I just don't know what I would do. So, thank you. I appreciate it. Of course, thanks to our fine sponsors, too, who make all of that possible. Have I thanked everybody? I think I have. Line 3, Tim, Franklin, Ohio. Hi, Tim.
Hello, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing well. So I kind of have a twofold question. I've been doing some network upgrades, and I jumped to the Eero Pro Mesh.
Love it. That's what I use.
And then I was heartbroken I tried to add all my IoT devices that require 2.4 SSID.
And it wouldn't work? I have all my IoT devices on my Eero.
Anything? So when I replaced the router with the new one, I set up the SSID to be the same as the old. Anything?
No. You don't need to. You mean the all you need is the name and password. You don't need to change the SSID.
Right. I set all that up to be the same. So anything that was...
Yeah, that's what I did, too.
Automatically
connected
to the new router.
Yeah.
But setting up any new devices, there's no way to specify. I can't force my phone to the 2.4 to get through the setup process.
You don't need to force it to 2.4. I'm not sure. I think you're overthinking it.
No. So basically, my question was...
So the Eero does both... bands, 2.4 gigahertz and 5.
With only one SSID, though.
I don't get this SSID thing you're talking about. You mean the password? SSID is not what you think it is.
Well, on my old router, I would have, my home, 2.4 SSID.
I see what you're saying. You want to specifically choose a 2.4 gigahertz signal.
Right.
Some of the old routers, they would have... Let's say your name of your router is Winthrop. They'd have Winthrop 2.4 and Winthrop 5, so you could choose the band. You don't do that with the Eero. Doesn't matter. Just they have one name.
The IoT devices will not set up otherwise. And I contacted Eero support. They said they're aware. Tough luck.
Well, what device do you have that doesn't work with it? Must be pretty old.
Several things. They're some Magic Home LED strip light controllers.
Okay.
Wyze bulbs, Wyze cameras.
No, I've used the Wyze with Eero. No problem at all.
I can't get through the setup process. And
so what's supposed to happen, I'm not sure why it's not happening, but I've used the Wyze with the Eeros. What's supposed to happen is the Wyze is supposed to correctly pick the band and join it. And everything should be fine. You don't need to do it manually, in other words. So I'm not sure why it's not at your system, but I am using a Wyze Cam right now with my Eero Pros. I have other 2.4 gigahertz devices. Some older devices would pick a 5 gigahertz band unwittingly, and then, you know, they'd join it. It wasn't that they didn't join it, but it just wouldn't work. So I'm not sure what you're doing. I hope you're not using static addresses or somehow messing with putting your fingers in the gears. Eero does 2.4, and the IoT devices, unless they're poorly designed, and I did have one device that was poorly designed that wouldn't do it right, that picked the wrong Eero signal. But normally they should pick it. It should happen automatically. And you're right. The Eero does not allow you to name separate channels. That's what I'm sure what the rep is telling you. I should mention Eero is a sponsor of some of our podcasts. But I have lots of 2.4 devices on my Eero. Dr. Mom saying she's in the same boat. Stoic Squirrel says, I have a new Epson Wi-Fi scanner, requires 2.4. I mean, there's something going on that either you have set, or there's some button that you've checked. You're doing static addresses or something. It should all work. Now, in other words, I understand what you're saying. I can't manually specify this needs to be the 2.4 gigahertz band. I understand that. It should, the device should do that automatically. If it doesn't, it's poorly designed. See if you can get a firmware update. Let's see, what else could we do? Well, yeah, somebody in the chat room is saying, hey, this is not a bad idea. You've got the old Eero still. If you do, plug that one in, set that one up, make that. In fact, this is the preferred way to do IoT. Make that the IoT Eero, and then reserve the Eero Pro for everything else. It is a good idea to isolate the Internet of Things stuff from your network where your other stuff is. Yeah, you can name it, but you can't name it. You can't give it separate names for different channels. I don't know of any other way around that. If you still can't get it working, then you need to get a new router, I guess. My old Asus router would let me have distinct names, SSIDs, for the different frequencies. Make sure you got 2.4 gigahertz set up and on. You haven't disabled it. You can disable it. That may be part of the problem. And the Eero is supposed to be intelligent enough to see what's on each band and optimize for that. That's one of the reasons you use an Eero, is for that specific reason. Tony in Honeybrook, PA. Hello, Tony. Your last call of the day. How are you?
Hello, Leo. How are you?
I'm great.
Good to talk to you.
What's up?
I've been a listener for 700 shows, and I finally have an issue for you.
Oh, boy.
So an app I use is ad-based, and it just gave me the option this weekend, instead of viewing ads, to join a residential proxy network.
Okay. Oh, so that you can share your whatever with other people.
Yeah, that's what I got from it. And I wanted to learn a little more about that and then get your impression.
And whether it's secure. You know, it's all in the implementation, the details of the implementation. Comcast does this with their Xfinity Wi-Fi cable modem and router. They always set up a guest network that anybody in the neighborhood can use. And when people said, well, that's, are they using my bandwidth? No. Yes, they are, but technically, no. Is it safe? Yes. But it's all implementation dependent. I mean, as soon as somebody's using one of your things, you're requiring that whoever's designed the software that's running, it really isolates you from the guest, right? What is the thing?
The app is a streaming TV app, and the residential network is from an oddly named company, Luminati.
That's scary. Yeah. So the idea is you're watching this TV, and then other people in your neighborhood could share it.
When I'm not using the app, then this Luminati company can use my devices.
Advertisers. Yeah.
It seems odd.
Well, look, they put the ads in there because they need to monetize somehow, or you can help them out. I can't tell you if it's secure or not because I'm not familiar with how they're doing it. It depends on that company doing a secure implementation.
Okay, do you have 30 seconds for a quick question on that?
I have 26, 25, okay. 24.
In looking it up, the companies who are selling this residential proxy service said that online sellers change their prices depending upon where you are looking
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. If you have 100 neighbors, they're going to love you. If you have one, not much good to them. Yeah, I would stay away from that if I were you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, it's a peer-to-peer streaming solution. All right, now I can talk to you because we're in the break.
Gotcha.
So tell me the name of the company. What is the product?
The company is, well, the product is it's one of the IPTV streaming apps.
Yeah, which one? Tubi or?
TV Tap is what it's called.
TV Tap. Yeah, a lot of these guys.
And go ahead.
You know, they're kind of, I'm looking at it right now.
I looked up Luminati, which was hard to find without getting Illuminati, of course.
Yeah.
Their sales pitch, because they sell this service.
Yeah, in a way, that's encouraging. It means TV Tap isn't rolling their own thing, that they're using a third-party service that is maybe has more resources to do it right. What does Luminati say?
Well, they say, and other companies like them, they want to use this residential network so they can query, they can do marketing research.
Oh.
Yeah,
it's Luminati.io, leading proxy service.
There you go.
For, well, your proxy needs static residential. So
go ahead. Yeah.
I'm wondering, so what does it look like? Does it look like... Like, can somebody join your network? That's puzzling.
Yeah, I didn't. I mean, I just kept the ads.
Yeah, I mean, I have no reason to know one way or the other. I've never heard of it. In fact, this is all new to me. I'm going to look into it.
Apparently, I looked. All the information I got was from places like Luminati that are selling this service.
Yeah.
And apparently, they want to use it so they can query Google repeatedly. To get different information.
Sounds a little sketch.
Doesn't it?
Yeah. But I don't know.
I just
don't know. This is all new to me. I've never seen this before. I'm checking it out. I'm going to do more digging on it. I'll ask some of our, experts in networking and security. But it sounds off the top of my head like something I wouldn't want to be involved in.
Exactly. Me too. The quick question, which I probably didn't ask right as follow-up, is it true that if I go to buy something, whether it be Amazon or maybe a smaller site, and I'm from Philadelphia, they may give me one price, but if I go from Iowa, they'll give me another?
They may. We don't know because Amazon's not transparent with this, but they definitely use all sorts of algorithmic pricing models, and the prices change all the time. One solution to this would be use something like Camel, which, and then you can kind of see what's going on. I have never seen it by location, but that doesn't mean they're not doing it. It just means, they're completely opaque in how they do this. And I've talked to people. I have a friend who sold air purifiers. He would have them made with his brand on it and everything and sell it on Amazon. One day he sees that Amazon's selling the same, it's got his name on it, themselves, at a higher price. And he can't quite figure out what's going on. It's Amazon's completely opaque about this. So, basically this is the modern world. Airlines have been doing it. You get on an airplane, nobody paid the same price for that ticket.
You know what? That's a good point. I didn't even think of that.
Yep. Yeah. That's algorithmic pricing is the future because it lets them maximize
it. Time, man.
Hey, I appreciate it. I will look into this Luminati. The name is not encouraging, is it?
Exactly, right.
I'm going to read more about what they're up to. Thank you.
All right, take care.
And for our previous caller, apparently Eero now says you can call tech support and they will temporarily turn off 5 gigahertz. So you can call them. I hope the previous caller is still listening. You can call them and say, hey, I need to set up a 2.4 gigahertz like a Wyze Cam. I need to turn off my 5 gigahertz channels. They can do that remotely while you set those up and then turn it back on. Once it's set up, you'll be fine. So that's an interesting workaround. I guess this is a problem with some devices. Maybe I was just lucky. Could well be I was lucky when I set up my Wyze cams, because I know they need 2.4, that it found the right signal. If it finds the wrong one, then we have a problem. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.